Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn. Hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
Wanted to help people, just seeing a lot of the frustrations or shortcomings of that, so became a doctor. And then
I feel like sleep is kind of underrated by a lot of people. They're like, whatever, I get whatever I get, and it's okay.
You can do things like in your own power, like how you eat, like your what time you go to bed, the things you do, exercise. These impact my health? That's crazy. But it's actually how things work. With carnivore, if you're going from like a standard American diet, or one of the things about the carnivore diet, it's going to cut out or leave you with a lot of the things that cause inflammation.
Hello and welcome. Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the power of a proper human diet. And today I'm honored to have Dr. Petkus on the channel with me. Welcome, Dr. Petkus. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I came across some YouTube videos you were doing, and one of them was on carnivore. I found that very interesting, but several of them were on sleep. And I also found that very interesting as well, because I have struggled with sleep most of my adult life. I was on a CPAP machine and I snored horribly. And so I wanted to talk about that a little bit more. I feel like when I was able to finally fix my sleep, and I did it through nutrition, that it a lot of other things fixed that were maybe related. And I feel like sleep is kind of underrated by a lot of people. They're like, whatever, I get whatever I get, and it's okay. But it seems like for me, suffering with depression and anxiety for a lot of my adult life, whenever I could reel in my sleep and have a really good night's sleep, the depression, the anxiety was less the next day. It feels like it's all tied together and more important than we talk about. So I was hoping to chat with you about that, but maybe if we could start out, could you just tell me a little bit about your background?
Yeah, so I'm from New Jersey, for better or for worse. I'm not sure why I felt that was the strongest way to introduce myself, but I made it out of there. Now I'm in Florida. And I had a slew of my own health issues around sleep apnea, and worked through that through a lot of different parameters like breathing, diet, other things like that. And, then at that time, saw how that sausage was made. If anyone's ever seen a sausage, or you have a grandpa from Eastern Europe, you'll know what I mean. And, just seeing a lot of the frustrations or shortcomings of that, and being able to be very alternative. Well, now I sound like an extremist who chants in the rainforest and does stuff, but I don't do that every day. I don't do that ever. But point being is being able to have a lot of changes in my own life where I've been able to see the benefit of, being able to really take a more natural approach to sleep and really emphasize that. Because I think we've probably gone through a similar journey, like CPAP, okay, here's some sleeping pills, maybe didn't get those lovely things. And at a certain point, you're like, is this kind of the best we got? Okay. That took 100 years for that. All right. You start to understand a little bit more how things naturally work and how you can do things like in your own power, like how you eat, like your, what time you go to bed, the things you do, exercise. These impact my health. That's crazy. but it's actually how things work. And that's, you know, what I do with people now, like whether it's, I think educating is such a lame word, but making videos, and I guess some people like to watch them. I just do it by myself and just recording what I say. but also, you know, working with clients and helping them with their own health education and all that. So they're overcoming their own sleep issues there. That's kind of, that's the nutshell version.
Right. That's great. Yeah. I went down similar rabbit hole. It sounds like to you, I was on the CPAP machine, all sorts of sleep medications throughout the years. The only thing that eventually ended up working for me was really changing my nutrition, changing my diet. For me, that was a carnivore diet. But what I've realized in the meantime is, I don't think it's just because I'm eating meat, which sounds insane to a lot of people, but it's because kind of using the word that you mentioned earlier, it's kind of natural, returning to what's natural for humans. I'm not eating all that processed garbage anymore. I feel like meat is the most natural thing I can eat given the 60,000 options in the grocery store. And it was amazing to me like how fast the sleep came back. So one of the questions I had for you was, when I was first diagnosed with sleep apnea, I went in and I did a sleep study, and the sleep doctor, he was a really nice guy. I think he meant well, but he was basically like, guy, you're overweight. You're going to have to, my neck was really big. He's like, you're going to have to lose maybe 80 pounds before you stop snoring. And so for me, it was a little bit hopeless because I had tried to lose weight so much, and I always yo-yoed and I was never able to lose weight. So I'm like, I'm just probably have the CPAP machine forever. I can't ever imagine losing 80 pounds. Long story short, or maybe a little bit too long, when I went on carnivore, it was just like a couple of weeks in and I stopped snoring. Like, not even a couple of weeks. I stopped snoring almost immediately on carnivore. What? Why? Like, do we know?
Probably just a big coincidence.
Right?
So, despite popular belief, the best way to use a carnivore diet to stop snoring is not just by putting steak up your nose, but instead what happens is, so there's going to be at the core level, snoring is a partial obstruction in your airway. So sleep apnea would be, or I guess more pointedly, obstructive sleep apnea would be a full obstruction where you stop breathing for like 10, 15, 20 seconds at a time. Whether your partner you share a bed with, it's really scary, you record it, you stop breathing. Now, this may blow some people's minds. This is like quantum physics level. Before you're all the way closed, you have to be partially closed. All right? I know, like, mind-blowing stuff here. But that's when you'll have snoring happen. And this is why, of all the people who have obstructive sleep apnea, 90% of them snore. And that's why, honestly, like, snoring, very rarely is it just like, just snoring. It's usually it's a gateway to obstructive sleep apnea. Now, coming back to carnivore and how that interacts with it, a partial obstruction is one factor for it. Okay, you need a more narrow airway. But then also, if you imagine a whistle, that's effectively how snoring works. You have some tissues in your airway causing friction, and that friction with the air causes a vibration. Very appetizing to think about, like tissues in your airway flopping around and causing noise. But that's what happens. Sorry if you were going to eat something before this. But what goes on is that it's the whistle effect of where you have air moving very quickly through a more narrow passageway. So again, a whistle, you need small passageway. But if you just hold like a whistle up in the air, it's not going to make a noise. But if there's a small jet or stream of air, like if you blow into it, then there's going to be noise. So point of that whole analogy, there's two conditions you need: faster airflow, narrower airway, or more narrow. Both is actually grammatically correct, but nonetheless, that's what you need to happen. With carnivore, if you're going from like a standard American diet, one of the things about the carnivore diet, it's going to cut out or leave you with a lot of the things that cause inflammation in the airway, where that's dairy. That's probably one of the top culprits, grain, et cetera, too many omega-6s. There's a whole list of things that is not going to be included as part of a carnivore diet that can drive inflammation in your airway. Now, something you may be able to help me out with, Gary, is this following analogy. So, and I'm stealing this from my physiology professor back in grad school. So Dr. P, if you're watching this is for you. Apparently hunters, and again, you can correct me because you're out there. You'll change. I'm not sure if this is actually true, but this is what I was told. You will drain a pond sometimes to change the patterns of what animals do, and that will change your hunting patterns. Is that a thing that happens?
Yeah.
It is? Okay. That I don't know much about because I think I fired a rifle like once in my life. So this guy goes out there and it's like PhD physiology guy and then like, you know, regular Joe's out in Pennsylvania. And the pipes they had were a little bit more narrow than they usually had. It was about like half the size in the radius. Usually it takes one day. Like they get there Saturday morning, they put the pipes in, and they're usually ready to hunt by the afternoon. They had smaller pipes, and then my professor, Dr. P, was like, I don't think we're going to be hunting this weekend. And everyone was like, no, it's just a little bit more narrow, this and that. And they like had this back and forth. And he's like, okay, I'll bet you a couple cases of beer that we're not going to bet. We're not going to hunt the entire weekend because that thing's still going to be there. It took till Tuesday. Instead of a couple hours, it took a couple days. And the reason for this is that the amount of flow through a tube.
Quick interruption. Thank you so much for watching. If you're interested in learning more about our documentary, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet, or supporting it, please visit donate.healinghumanity.movie. Our goal is to reach millions of people that are hopeless right now, and sharing the examples of real people over the course of 1 year that are undertaking a proper human diet to overcome obesity, type 2 diabetes, depression, anxiety, fertility issues. We couldn't do it without you. We thank you so much. We are also selling these shirts, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet. Every penny we get from those goes towards the documentary. And last, we have memberships. If you click the little join button, it's best to do it on desktop. Under any one of my YouTube videos, you can join and become a member. We have hundreds of members right now. We do members only videos. We do members only behind the scenes. You can email me as a member and I'll answer you. And every penny from that goes to support the documentary. And the last thing is we have these Redmond's portable salt shakers. These things are awesome. You can get the best salt. You can take it with you. We sell these on the website along with our water bottles and cutting boards, and every penny from all of those goes 100% towards supporting the documentary. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is completely free. All of these links are in the description below. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to today's video.
Is exponentially related to the radius to the fourth power. I just said a bunch of words, but the point being is like, imagine an equation. You have 1 over r to the fourth power. So a small change in the radius, let's say if we go from 1 to 2, that is going to impact the flow through that tube by a factor of 16.
Ooh,
that's a lot.
Right. Wow.
And if you do the math to make this more of a approachable thing to think about, if we imagine our airways, let's say we have a 2 centimeter radius at some point in our airway, which is somewhat close to what it would be like in a certain spot. If we go from 1.5 centimeters in radius somewhere to 2, that's 0.5 centimeters, which is, what's something on my desk that would be that thick? That's about, if you take about 10 sticky notes, like that's what that width would be, 0.5 centimeters. That will double the airflow. Okay. So if you go from 1.5 to 2, that will double the airflow.
Mm.
Now, coming back to eating meat. So when you go from a inflammatory diet or a diet that has more inflammatory foods in it to something that cuts a lot of those out, that's what you're doing. You have now increased the amount of airflow you can have by about twofold just from a diet. And like, this is no surgery. You didn't have to like I don't think I have my like the CPAP mask near me nearby. Like it's a huge change. And that, like, and people already intuitively know this. My parents would always joke with me when we like whenever we would get colds as kids, my mom would just take a bottle of hot sauce and put it on the kitchen counter. Like, all right, here's your here's your cure. Smell some of this. Open it up. But I mean, it did work. But like such a small change in your airway caliber can lead to huge changes. So that can take someone like you. You were on this like partial obstruction line, like just right on that edge, and then reducing the inflammation in your diet then took you to the part of the edge where that you like went from a more like sort of narrow whistle hole, and now it was a lot bigger.
Right.
So that's the one aspect of it there. And that's like what, like, it's always funny when I post a video like that, there's the people who are like, oh yeah, like that's what happened to me. And then there's people who are like, impossible. There's no possible way. I assume they talk like that.
Right. But,
and that's just,
no, I really appreciate the analogy too, because it makes sense. And it's amazing the amount of flow just by having it open up a little bit. It's, after I, this was like a big thing for me, Dr. Petkus. When I found this out, I was like, this is crazy. I thought there was some, like it was some freak thing happening with me. And then I did more research and I heard Dr. Jordan Peterson on Joe Rogan. He did carnivore diet and he said he stopped snoring the first week. And then I started doing more research. I started hearing more people say this, but for me, no one ever mentioned that. I think I had two different sleep doctors over the years. None of them ever mentioned inflammation. Is this something that's just not common knowledge, or are the sleep doctors like, we talk about diet to people and they never listen, so we'll just throw a CPAP machine at them? Or what's the deal with this? Because it doesn't seem like it's common knowledge that a lot of people are snoring from inflammation.
Yeah, so it's not going to be, because when medical doctors are taught about inflammation in medical school and residency, it's going to be more in the context of these inflammatory conditions, or like autoimmune conditions, where it's this very acute, obvious, and clinical entity. Now, I said all that to not throw my entire profession under the bus, because anything subclinical, where, you know, there's just some days, like if you went out and ate half a pizza tonight, you're going to wake up feeling like puffy and inflamed. Doesn't mean you have Hashimoto's the next day, or like psoriatic or arthritis, but you have a low level of inflammation in your body. Okay. It's happening, but that's not something that there's going to be a pill or procedure or a therapy like made for, because we would like to think in medicine that like, oh, there's a problem, let's do something about it. Whether it's like any tools we possibly can, but just by nature of the industry, it's more of thinking of like, okay, what's the pill or like the injectable or the surgery we can provide? And then that's what is now utilized in practice. And then that's what the money goes towards. And then that's what is researched further to now create, you know, derivatives or variations of these technologies or pills. That's research, and then that's taught, and then that's covered by insurance, and then that's practice, and then that's what's like, it's so on and so forth of this like triangle of like, here's modern medicine. That's right. Essentially what goes down. So that's why like the idea of like, well, what if I eat more carbohydrate? Like that's not going to be brought up in medical school or residency, not because people who go into those fields are not well-meaning. It's because like, it's not what is brought to the table of the discussion. It's like, well, how can we drug this? And like, I think sometimes, I mean, in some circles of where you'll typically hear this more around like functional medicine, they'll say like, oh yeah, like, you know, traditional doctors, I think they'll either quote like 4 or 8 hours of nutrition in the curriculum. And I would like to assure you it's worse than that. Not in terms of the hours spent, but like the things that they'll cover are predominantly like, well, mainly something called TPN, which is total parenteral nutrition, which if you don't know what that is, that's great and hope you never do. But it's when like you're basically being fed through IV nutrition or a tube, or well, I guess IV nutrition would be TPN, through a tube would be through a G tube. That's the nutritional information we get, where it's like literally breaking down nutrition into just like literally maltodextrose, the tiniest bit of fat, because you obviously can't inject someone's veins with fat. You'll cause like an emboli, and some like amino acids and some minerals. Like that's the nutrition we get. And then we, you know, you have to calculate, well, if this guy's 100 kilograms and he's a burn victim, what should he get? Like that's the nutritional. So it's the same word, but a different meaning, which is why when someone like you, you go to the doctor and you're like, well, I'm thinking about eating just meat. Like it just causes a glitch, because it's just like not data, not found, essentially.
Yeah.
Is the whole thing that goes on there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a frustrating thing. I know in the carnivore community, we always use these analogies, but it's like you take your dog to the vet. That's the first thing they ask them, or what are they eating? But you go to the doctor as a human and they almost never ask you. But in my experience, it's been like every one of my major health issues that I suffered from, the root cause was the nutrition and the food. But I was like trusting the doctors and be like, well, clearly they know what they're talking about, kind of thing. And then you just end up going down the wrong path for longer and longer. But that's why I'm glad you're doing things a little bit differently. How do you approach it if someone comes to you and they're snoring, and they, what sort of conversations do you have with them?
Yeah. So a lot of them and long ones. So typically with like understanding the snoring, severity is usually the number one thing I'm trying to hone in on. Like, okay, how bad is this? Because like I said, it'll be a spectrum of where snoring, okay, obstructive sleep apnea, how bad is it? Are you someone who you're trying to stay awake behind the wheel? Are you trying to stay awake behind the Zoom meeting or the screen here? How bad are things? And then from there, you know, it becomes a discussion like, okay, well, how much like needs to be done? And a lot of the things I'll lead in with, you know, nutrition will be a part of it, but probably and this is kind of the second half of like the equation here, is more of like the breathing mechanics. Now they come together, because nutrition is going to be an inlet to your metabolism, and how like your metabolic state is going to determine the rate at which you breathe, the speed at which you breathe, the regularity of it, so on and so forth there. I just find that people get a better, I think it's less overwhelming. Just be like, do 15 minutes. I almost feel like trying to sneak my foot in the door. Like, all right, just like, oh, you don't want to overhaul your diet. Okay. That's cool. That's cool. How about like 10 minutes of breathing exercises? Okay. Right. And that becomes a way, because as people make like improvements in their health, because, you know, I really love how you bring up your own story, because everyone has that moment where they realize like, wait, what I do for my health and what I eat, it does impact how I, oh, okay. Like it becomes this like turning point. You're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And to give people the hope, like, hey, like you can do lots of other things for your snoring that don't require a tube over here or clips over here or something holding your tongue in place. So usually I'll move more towards the breathing exercises, or even like different airway muscles, like your tongue, your lips, et cetera. Exercises for those, people typically respond. And then when they start to gain momentum, then I'll start to introduce like, oh, hey, like you like that? Well, here's more. Sort of thing, because people really gain a lot of motivation in that way, because I'm sure like you were like, okay, carnivore diet, and then maybe brought some other things, and that's usually the typical journey that will go on.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you seeing, like trend wise stat wise are people snoring and having more problems sleeping more and more, or is it pretty steady?
I would say more and more. Well, so a few things I want to say. One, I don't always go straight to carnivore. I mean, very rarely do I go straight carnivore people. In fact, I work with many vegans and vegetarians, so I try to find what works in many ways. Now, to this point, I'm definitely seeing it more. I'm seeing it in younger people, because usually sleep apnea, like when I, like if I told you I had sleep apnea 10 years ago, your first thought would be like, what, when you were eight? Like, I'm aware I look somewhat young. Thank you. And yeah, 10 years ago, it's like, oh, like in ninth grade, dude. But like, it made no sense, like in shape, all this stuff. And I was just like, well, what the heck? You're in your 20s. Sleep apnea is, you're 65, you're 50, 60, 80 pounds overweight. So it is happening in younger people, but I also say it's more severe. And statistically, I guess not statistically, but epidemiologically, it is getting more common. And this is if you factor out just how much more diagnostics are being done, because it used to not be as common to just like, oh, go get a sleep study or like do this. And now there's at home studies. And now, like, I mean, it's kind of sad and frustrating, but like now it's like, wait, women can get sleep apnea too? Oh, wow. Like, it's, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder how modern medicine functions. So people are looking for it more. So they're finding it more as a result. So the jury's still out if like absolutely it's at higher rates. I think it is, because it's different statistical adjustments. But I would say it's getting worse and worse. And then also like sleep apnea is something, by the time someone goes to their primary care, it's probably been going on for like 2 to 4 years already. So I think we're just going to see more and more waves of that.
Do you get into other things besides just snoring and sleep apnea? Just, I guess, sleep health in general, or people having problems with insomnia or getting a full night's sleep?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because your ability to breathe at night is a necessary but not sufficient element to have good sleep. Now, in plain English, is if you want to have a fire, and if you just go in your backyard and you get a bunch of logs, you're just going to be in your backyard with a bunch of logs. Okay. You need to have like fire. You need to do this thing and bring out, like, so logs are a necessary part, but they're not sufficient. You would need a spark. You need some oxygen. That would all be sufficient. So when you're able to breathe well, doesn't mean you're quite at the point where you're going to have good sleep quality. Because we'll have people who, I guess, is a common pattern. They're working with us, and whether it's seeing their AHI go down in their machine, if they're doing overnight pulse ox, that's getting better and better and better. Numbers are great. They're feeling like, you know, better, but still not like popping out of bed, feeling amazing, and all these different things. That's because, like, by the time those metrics are improving, and AHI is a marker of like how well you're breathing and oxygenation and all that, at night, if that improves, or your oxygen levels, if those improve, that's just now the beginning of, oh, my body can sleep well. Like, that's the beginning of it all. So sleep quality, like insomnia, which many people would qualify as, that's going to be like the next target. Like, how can we continue to improve your sleep quality? And a lot of that will come to like, hey, what are the nutrients you're missing in your diet? Hey, what's your evening routine? Like, oh, you're watching TV till 11 p.m. Okay. So, you know, looking for these different aspects that are going to be impacting someone's sleep quality at night. Because once you fix the breathing, then the next thing is the sleep quality.
Right. Do you have any advice for someone that's just trying to get some better sleep or having troubles?
Yeah, I would say the number one thing I would say, and it's like kills me, because like people will be like 2 months into working with us and they're like, yeah. So I'm like, I'm scrolling through Instagram at night. I'm like, okay. So the phone. You got to pick a time, 8, 9 p.m., unless you're a first responder. Okay. It just has to go away. Just somewhere else. Gone. Okay. Because the light from it is going to prevent the release of melatonin in your sleep hormone. The stimulating content from it is going to get like your dopamine revving up, which is the opposite of what you want to be doing. And it's just really bad. Doesn't allow your mind to actually, you know, unwind and get into a place where you can go to sleep and have good sleep architecture. And like, it's literally the thing. Cause like, I'll have people who are like, oh yeah, I'm super in the health. And they'll like email me at like 12:30 AM. You know, I'm just, so I would say that's the biggest thing. And being able to have that, like, not just like a nightly routine where it's like in the 30 minutes before I go to bed, I like fold up a origami and write 16 things I'm grateful about. But like the really like the 2-3 hours before, cause like we go back, like I love the natural sentiment of like when someone's talking about either like a carnivore diet or like a paleo diet, like that's natural, but like extend that even further, because people don't really ever talk about like, well, 150 years ago, what were you doing the 3 hours before bedtime? You were not, like, Benjamin Franklin was not watching Jeopardy. And I know those timelines are all off in all sorts of different ways, but like they were, whether it was like, okay, the sun is down. Oh, maybe a candle. Okay, cool. If like if you were rich and like killing it, you would have a candle. But other than that, it was just lights out. And those are like other constituents of like a natural lifestyle a lot of people like ignore, because like, you know, we can be in our homes and, you know, eating our grass fed, pasture raised, whatever. But like, just by nature of like, I'm in this room, the windows are closed. That's an artificial light. That's an artificial light. Here's an artificial screen. You know, like there's all this electromagnetic stuff. Like what part of this is natural? Like none of it. So I'm not saying to go live in a bunker. You'll get other issues, but like you have to appreciate what the really non-natural things you are doing. Cause like, again, Benjamin Franklin was not like going through TikTok and like, oh yeah, that would be a good article in the Constitution. Yeah. Yeah. Like right. That's not what was going on back then.
Right. There's a weird sort of phenomenon with carnivores where they sleep less. I don't know if you've heard about any of this, but like, yeah. Dr. Kiltz is kind of a popular carnivore doctor. He gets up at like 3 a.m. and I've talked to him about it before. And he's like, this is probably back to the natural thing, maybe a little bit more natural. He'll get up at like 3 a.m. wide awake. He does a live stream. And then he says he'll take a nap like maybe 2 times a day or 3 times a day. I was like, that just seems so weird. That seems crazy. But it works really well for him. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or not, but he's saying that might have been how ancestrally, like way back before Benjamin Franklin kind of time it was. Maybe we were hunting around, catching a big animal and then napping for a little bit, kind of like a cat or something like that.
Yeah, there's so many different places to go with this. There's not going to be one best set hours of sleeping for one person at all times of the year, which is a really important distinction, like all times of the year. So for instance, like well, you described this like shorter sleep cycle. I don't know what time they got. Do you know what time he goes to bed?
I'm not sure.
It'd be one thing.
Like 6 in the afternoon.
I'm like 3 a.m. So different times of the year. So like the summertime, like there's a reason siesta, it's, you know, we'll just say it translates to 6 in many different ways, because people would have a shorter sleep cycle in these longer parts of the year. So like this summer when there's, you know, longer hours of light, like 16 hours light or 18 hours light, if you're in Alaska, 26 hours light a day. And that by itself is going to eat away at how many hours you have at night to sleep. Right. And thus also during the daytime, there's going to be natural pockets of high activity. Now in the summer, do you want to be super active when it's like solar noon? Probably not. No. And being able to have those pockets of time and then also like make up for that sleep in a way. But like, then that doesn't make sense. Like if you're in Massachusetts in the dead of winter, you're going to have a different sleep pattern, or you may fall into a different sleep pattern, like known as a biphasic sleep pattern, which is, you go to bed super early, and Benjamin Franklin, I never thought we'd talk so much about him today, but that is, we're going to make up a Benjamin Franklin diet, which is filled with a lot of not great things. But they would describe something known as like a biphasic sleep pattern. You go to bed when the sun sets in Massachusetts at like, I think it's, I mean, probably in November, it'll be like 5 p.m. or so, 6 p.m. And then you sleep and then you have your first night's sleep. And then you're up at like 1 to 3 a.m. for an hour or two. And then you have your second night's sleep. You have a biphasic sleep pattern, two phases. And that's fine. But that wouldn't work over in the summer. So it's to illustrate the point and also like the myth of there's not like a golden number or percentage. Because I know sleep trackers will be like, you need 2 hours and 22 minutes of deep sleep. And if you don't, then you're just going to explode. But the thing is, that's going to depend on the time of the year, what you ate, because your nutrition will also change that. The different stresses you had that day. Was it a mentally stressful day? Was it a physically stressful day? That's going to dictate what your body needs from sleep. Because like sleep is a very dynamic process, not just like a, you know, one size fits all sort of deal. Like you go through the car wash, you're in, you're out. It's going to change based on what your physiological demands are. So for instance, if you're eating, say, super high carb and like what would be like a ridiculous high carb diet, you eat rice cakes and orange juice, which sounds so gross if that's all you ate, but like you're going to use different coenzymes and minerals as part of metabolizing that, and then that's going to impact your overall metabolic state, and that's going to change how you sleep. Whereas let's say you eat nothing but brisket, okay, you're going to use a different set of enzymes. You're going to have a different inflammation status, lower than the rice cake diet. And then that's going to change how your body has different demands at night for sleep. So it's a lot more dynamic. So like, even if you're getting shorter sleep on carnivore, it's not necessarily a bad thing, unless you're like having a lot of daytime fatigue, et cetera, there.
Right. Yeah, I think it's just excess energy from not being so inflamed. Not maybe like prior to this, when I was on the standard American diet, I imagine it took a toll on my body digesting food. And then an hour later, I was hungry again and eating more and more kind of thing. The biphasic sleep, that's really interesting because I've noticed that for myself. A lot of carnivores report this too, where they wake up like wide awake, 3 a.m. and they can't fall back asleep. I've had that happen a couple times. But then when I do fall back asleep, usually about an hour or two later, I guess that's kind of I never heard that before. You said biphasic sleep. It's like the best sleep ever. The second part of the sleeping. When I wake up at 3 a.m, fall asleep at like 4 a.m. and sleep for 2 more hours or something. It's some of the best sleep I think I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That can fall into the category of biphasic. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. I never heard of that before. Do you, in any cases, ever recommend any sleep medication or supplements or things like that?
I don't love sleep medications, mainly because they become this like big crutch. Now, sometimes people like, I mean, this is not a everybody go off your benzos thing. Okay, no, that's radically dangerous. No one change your medication. Always talk to your prescribing provider. Now, those will create a big level of dependency. And then also they will just change how your body's, or I guess more importantly, your brain's biochemistry around sleep. Like if it's affecting how GABA should work or how serotonin should work or really all these other different components, that's going to create a imbalance in your brain and how you can generate good, healthy sleep at night. And people know this because if they run short on their prescription or they just run out for whatever reason, they know they're not going to sleep well. Just not at all. Now, people need to use that like in a pinch or like as a bridge to a place where things are getting better. Then yeah, I mean, it's a tool for a certain thing. But just like, you know, you're not going to use a temporary tool all the time because it's going to wear things down. Same, like you don't wear your snow tires year round. That's just not a good idea. Now for supplements, it's going to depend like there's gonna be certain things that I don't love, like especially around sleep apnea, like those melatonin or like GABA derivatives, because those are going to, I mean, those are like muscle relaxants. And well, if we relax these muscles, that's gonna get sketchy really quickly. So I don't love those ones. Unless someone's like traveling a lot, melatonin can be appropriate as like a re-synchronization of rhythms. But beyond that, don't really love it. Now, there will be certain supplements that can help like replete certain nutrients. Like I think magnesium is probably the most common ones. Like those ones I like, where you kind of like restore the amount of a certain nutrient, whether it's like magnesium, B vitamins, whatever. Those are going to be more beneficial. And also like people can stop them and then they can just continue to have good sleep. So that's typically how I utilize those.
Awesome. Okay. It froze up for a second, but I think we're okay now.
Okay.
You still hear me all right?
I can hear you. Yeah. I didn't notice it freezing.
Okay, cool. I wanted to ask you a little bit more. Why are you so passionate about this to create YouTube content about it? What sort of inspired you to do that?
YouTube? I mean, I just talk by myself and I happen to have a camera. But I think, I mean, it's fun. And also, a lot of people just like don't know these things are like even a possibility. Because one of the hopeless things about any condition is when your options are limited. And you'll see that in, say, cancer over the past decades, where there's more cancer. Some cancers, not all. But there's also more hope, because people are like, oh, there's a drug for this and this and that. But the point of this analogy is there's more hope because there's more options. Whereas sleep apnea, do you want a CPAP with this mask or that mask? Or like, it's just like, okay. Like there's like basically just slight variations of the same thing.
Right.
And it becomes a very hopeless situation. And then people go out there and they get into this rut of like, well, maybe I need a head chin strap, or I need this like magnetic thing I put on my nose, or oh, this mouth guard or that mouth guard. And it just becomes like a rabbit hole of trying to like be in the same framework of thinking. Cause like all a mouth guard doing is just trying to allow more air to get into you. Whereas a CPAP is just a glorified leaf blower pushing more air into you. But when like someone can go on YouTube and be like, wait, how I eat affects, is this guy, is he from some like weird Eastern European country? Is this real? Is this my last name is Lithuanian, by the way. But like just being able to create that new opening of hope for people, because whether it's like diet changes or I'll have like different like airway exercises or sort of breathing videos there, it becomes a whole new like universe of things to do. And that was the weirdest way I could have said universe, but universe. I think I was going for carnivore and universe at the same time. But it becomes like a whole new like level of like, if I work on like my stress levels, that will help my sleep. Or if I work on my circadian rhythm, that will help with my breathing. It just becomes a place of where people can actually be a lot more empowered about their health, as opposed to CPAP didn't work, my doctor's blaming me, life sucks.
Right.
Sort of deal. Because that's where like a lot of people will just end up and then just kind of give up. But yeah, being able to show people like, hey, there's a lot of things you can do. I think it's important. And also YouTube comments are always funny. That's like the funniest thing of, I mean, the positive comments I appreciate, but the people.
I'm with you on that one. Yeah. No, that's really cool. I'm glad you're doing it, because when I was diagnosed with the sleep apnea, it was really hopeless. And it is pretty scary too. Like you said, I more so for my wife, but Is he dead? Like he stops breathing over and over again. And now she was, it was either that or the snoring, which kept her up all night. And now that when I stopped doing it, then she's like, is he dead? He's not making any noise now. He's just sleeping kind of thing. But I find after the fact, how crazy it was that I actually had to, for years, strap this machine to my face to pump air in because I was choosing to eat foods that made my airways highly inflamed in the first place. I had to go through all, and that's the only choice is this crazy machine. I love movies. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Office Space, but when they take the fax machine out and beat it up with a baseball bat, that's what I wanted to do to my CPAP machine. I absolutely despise that thing so much. And now there's a lot of like recalls and things I've seen. I think actually the one that I had might have had a recall on it too, which is kind of scary, but that's pretty cool. You're doing all that. So a lot of your videos are on snoring, sleep, improving your sleep, things like that. But I came across the one you did on carnivore. How did you go down that rabbit hole? Because that is, it was very refreshing. Like I was rolling my eyes. I'm like, oh God, this guy's gonna tear up carnivore and he's gonna say it's horrible and you're gonna clog your arteries. And but it was a great video. I really enjoyed it. Like what got your interest into doing a carnivore video?
I was just looking at all the different diets, and honestly, I have a whole list of videos I want to make. And I mean, as meaningful as this may be, carnivore is pretty high up in the alphabet, and that's how that video got chosen to be done recently.
So vegan's going to be one of the last ones you do, right?
It'll be one of the last ones. People will have to wait for that one. but you think I'm kidding, but I'm actually very serious. I was like, oh, carnivore is early on. But all, I mean, we do also have clients who they're like different clients will drift towards different dietary templates, which will guide them in doing that because the best diet or nutrition plan is the one you're going to actually do consistently. So we do have some people that go down the road of the, like basically like, oh man, I really like eating more protein, da da da. Then like, well, like, okay, let's just kind of see that through to completion, or more people are more keto, or more people more paleo, or we have a few vegans, vegetarians. There's many ways to make different things work, except I mean, standard American diet, that's not really. You can make improvements, but that's not really a mainstay. So yeah, that's why. That's the very shallow reason I did the carnivore video. But also, I think it illustrates a lot of good biochemistry of what are the things that will improve a lot of the metabolic deficits that do happen in sleep apnea. Because not only the inflammatory side, but also a lot of like hunger hormones get thrown off in sleep apnea, and like a high protein diet will also counteract that. In sleep apnea, just based off the like someone's like, they mean it's not a technical wake up where you're like, ah, I'm awake. Okay, I'm conscious. Cool. But many times when you're have a pause in breathing, it'll wake you up to an unconscious level, like from deep sleep to light sleep. That still has a really big impact on your nervous system, your body, and putting into this fight or flight. And then that's going to shift your metabolism where basically you can no longer burn fat. So then you have to be a sugar burner, like you described in a way. You didn't say it overtly, but like you eat, cool. All right, hour or two later, need some more whatever. Give me my banana or whatever. So people become these like obligate sugar burners in a carnivore diet, or just really even we took that label away. We said like a high protein diet that was like higher protein, higher fat. Well, that's gonna help shift someone more into a more flexible and healthier cellular metabolism where they're not just reliant on carbohydrates, but now, oh, they're getting some amino acids to burn and can start to reopen their fat burning pathways and see some efficiency with that. So a carnivore diet allows that to happen in a big way. I also think it's really easy to stick to. I never get when people are like, it's so hard. I'm just like, this is like the most basic thing. Just go to the meat aisle. These
Right.
items.
Bacon, eggs, like steak. People say that to me. Aren't you bored of this yet? And I'm like, bored of eating the best food on the planet, the most nutritionally dense food that gives me everything I need. Like, I remember when I was little, it used to be like a big treat. My parents would go out once a year for their anniversary and get some meat or a big steak or something. I'm like, this is a pretty good problem to have if it is. But I'm with you. Like, I joke around about the vegan stuff, but I'm on the same page. Like, the real enemy, I think, is the standard American diet. If you can go vegan and get rid of the inflammatory food, more power to you. I know a lot of people that aren't able to sustain that. They try it and they have issues, but I think it goes back to the word we used earlier. It's just like return to what's natural. It seems like humanity's gotten so far away from what's natural, mainly through the foods we're eating, but also like these things. And like you were saying, looking at the TV all the time. And the more we do that, it just seems like it's the sicker and sicker we get. Are there other things when your sleep is bad that are kind of correlated? Like, I had a TIA mini stroke 8 years ago, and I think they said maybe that was partially due to my poor sleep and sleep apnea, and I'm gasping for air all night, and maybe oxygen saturation or things like that. Are there other downstream effects? Because I don't know, like, this isn't very good science, but when my sleep improved, it seems like subsequently so many other things improved. I don't know if that was because of the carnivore, the lack of inflammation, or the sleep, but it always seemed, I always had this weird clue of I slept great last night. I'm no longer horribly anxious the next day. And I had horrible anxiety for like 15 years. It seemed like it was cause and effect kind of thing.
Yeah. So I was just laughing because one of my buddies, he has his favorite saying is like, I don't know the science behind it, but, and then just
Right.
the, so to answer your question with a TIA or mini stroke, yes, it would, because two big factors. One, you're waking up, you're having difficulty breathing. It's going to ramp up your fight or flight nervous system. That's going to increase your blood pressure during the day. Any good doctor, if someone's having just persistent hypertension despite the addition of medications, or it's just high all the time and like there's no other reasons, like sleep apnea should be like one of the top things going off upstairs in someone's brain. Now, the other thing is that, do you remember what time of day you had your event? Was it in the early
It was
morning?
in the afternoon.
Oh, well, you
Yeah.
just shot my entire theory up. But nonetheless,
Sorry.
I know you
Although
should
I
have said
had
morning.
insomnia horribly through that period, so I hardly slept at all that night, but I was
So it
laying on
could
the
have been
couch.
your morning. Let's just twist this so I'm still right. But
Yep.
if you look at all the different cardiovascular events, heart attacks and stroke, there's a curve where they follow a pattern through the day. Most of them happen between 8 and 11 a.m. All right. On the local time zone, not like it's not
Central
how it works.
Standard Time.
So the reason for this is because when you're not sleeping well, it damages something called your circadian rhythm. And that is the proper timing of every single process in your body. So for instance, like you go to the bathroom, you poop in the morning. Okay, good. If you had to do that at like 1 a.m., like that's like not fun. If that's like how your body decided, like, okay, well, hope you enjoyed sleep, but let's gotta poop. Not be good. So with that, I usually don't use poop as the analogy for circadian rhythm, but your body has to synchronize the strength at which your heart beats with the level of constriction, or how narrow or how open your blood vessels are. It wants to synchronize that. If there's a mismatch, like, oh, your heart's beating a little harder, there's more cardiac output, be the name for that. That goes up. A good circadian rhythm would then also have vasodilation. It's easier to push that blood through big open passageways. A mismatch would be increasing cardiac output, okay? But then we have more narrow. So that's gonna increase blood pressure. That's the mismatch that happens at that time of the day between 8 and 11 a.m. And that's why those events will be more common in, well, at that time, and also in people with sleep apnea, and also poor sleep too.
Right. The human body is just amazing. The more you start going down the rabbit hole and learning things and how it figures all this stuff out. The circadian rhythm too, this is like a trend with carnivores. I don't know. Once you like fix your health and you start feeling healthier, you start having more energy. A lot of people do this, myself included, where I'll go outside in the morning when the sun's coming up, look at the sun first thing in the morning, and I guess that helps somehow reset the circadian rhythm. That's what I've heard anyways. I don't know the science behind it, but
you got to start with saying,
I feel like I sleep better when I do that.
But...
right. Right.
So I do know the science behind it, and that there's going to be so many different factors that program your body's circadian rhythm. Do you ever have a grandfather clock?
No.
Or like a
cuckoo clock?
Did your dad ever have to like set it every single day? Okay. So, same thing with humans. There needs to be something that sets your rhythm every day, but not only sets it once, but you set it multiple times per day. So it's like way more annoying than that one clock my dad always had to come home with and was always like all that. And there's going to be a lot of different signals. One of the strongest is going to be light of any kind. Well, okay, visible light. let's restrict it to that. Visible light. It could be from your phone, could be from the sun. So both ways, whether it's like I talked about before, like having your phone like point blank, like, okay, I'm going to do this till I can't sleep. All right, well, good luck. But also when you get outside in the morning and you get that natural sunlight, which is going to be at a far greater intensity, lux, than, I mean, this light I have over here. So this light I have over here, for some reason, if I think if I stare at it, I'll remember how many lux it is. But it's somewhere, it's probably around, I think, 500 to 1,000 lux. Okay, if that means anything to anyone, then you have too much time on your hands to know what that means. Outdoor, like sunrise is going to be like anywhere. This is a broad range. It's going to be anywhere from like 10 to 40,000 lux. Midday, summer is going to be like 100,000 lux. So that sends a huge signal through your eye, through your retina, goes through your retina, your hypothalamus, your brain. And it's like, hey, guess what? It's daytime. So do the daytime things. All right. Poop, like poop. Get the poop going. You know, get your cortisol on. Come on. We gotta get going here. And that's why like being out at sunrise, et cetera, morning light, will have a profound impact on that.
Right. So I have kind of a little bit of an unusual question, but we're filming a documentary called Healing Humanity, and it's following what was going to be a carnivore diet documentary, but we actually have a ketogenic vegetarian woman in there. The basis of the documentary is following people that have returned to a proper human diet, natural diet, for 1 year, and they're overcoming just some crazy health issues. So I'm asking everyone we interview, what is your opinion? Does humanity need healing?
Yes.
All right.
You want me to expand on that?
Maybe a little bit.
A little bit. I think we first have to understand like what it means to be healed in a way where it is you can function throughout your life in a way that allows you to more or less like do the things you want to do. And I pick want very specifically because like who like, oh yeah, this life's great. I did everything I needed to do. Okay, cool. And so being able to be at that higher level of function, whether like it's more cognitive things, you love to do oil paintings. Cool. You want to do a tough mudder, like whatever, like that's, I think what it means to be healed in a way. Now, obviously being healed would imply there was a lower level of function. And a lot of people are either at that and they know that, or they're at that and they don't know that. Or they're like, you know, oh, I'm doing great. I'm a biohacker. I take modafinil, you know, two times a day. Oh, okay, great. You sound like a health expert. Maybe I should hire you and not the other way around. Like, you can like, these aren't real conversations. Here they are. But, point being is like, there's so many things that have gone, haywire because as controversial as what I'm about to say is, or I mean, not even controversial, maybe it's like, it sounds like I'm very jaded. I don't think humans fundamentally want to be healthy. I don't think they do. Like, if you think about, like, just in a natural sense, the priority of like an animal that is not going to be as cognizant as a human, it's not like, oh, what's my self-care routine today? It's not going to make like an Instagram reel of like Sunday self-care goes, like, it's not going to do that. Okay. And people only do that for validation. People want to be able to live a life of where they can do the things they want to do and like also enjoy them and be present and have freedom and options without causing extreme discomfort. Being healthy is a means to that end, and very rarely the end of itself. Because I can tell you, like, the most, like, the clients who do like the best, like the most motivated, they're never the people who are like, I want to be generally healthy. It's the people who recognize like their snoring or their sleep apnea is like basically ruining their lives, and they still have a vision of like what is possible on the other side. And health is a means to that. So I think the more people recognize that, because it elevates it a lot more. Because I'm not saying like poo-poo on health or like denigrating the idea of being healthy, but you can elevate it to where like you eat a certain way so that you can like do the things you want to do. Eat a certain way so you can like be there with your kids. You can, like, or like run your business or all these different things, right? So it's a means to an end. The other thing is like really recognizing how far off the path we've gotten. So like, I think this is time number seven, but Benjamin Franklin, even before then, time before Benjamin Franklin, also known as, TBBF, is, there's so many things that were like people didn't even think twice about as being natural. Like, if we think about how much time the average person spends outside per day nowadays in 2024, it's about 20 to 30 minutes. Okay. Now, if we go back to, I can't keep picking Benjamin Franklin. Let's go back to right before the Industrial Revolution. If anyone's ever read the book, like The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, which features Lithuanians, by the way, shout out to Lithuania again. They were outside all the time. Like, you only went inside to sleep so that some random thing or bugs didn't crawl all over you. You were outside pretty much all the time, or you're like, or then eventually what happened was what became normal was working inside a factory, and then like the Industrial Revolution, and then also like the blue collar revolution, not really a revolution, but more of a gradual thing. The new normal became like being inside all the time and like being like this, like, just typing away. That is so far away from anything like natural and what a human body was designed to do. So it'll fall into a place of dysfunction. So I think the more like, yes, I think diet is important, but like whether it's like being outside, getting the right amount of sun exposure, being out for sunrise, like going to bed at sunset, not wondering what's the latest TikTok trend at 1 a.m. Those are gonna be the things that are really gonna allow your body to get back into a place of where it can function. So I think being able to have that real honest look at that and like just how unnatural things are, because I can tell you, listen to your, what do they call it, AirPods? You put those in your head, drive it around, listen to music, listen to, I mean, you can only listen to this, but everything else is bad. It just becomes a glance in like how far we've come away from like how things that should be, but like rather what our bodies have like literally evolved to do. And now we're seeing the maladaptations in choosing like, okay, well, we're gonna choose this, and then we're gonna choose a life where it's like, I was pretty healthy until I had all these like 30,000 things happen to me. Like, people say it all the time, like, besides that stroke, I'm pretty healthy. I'm like, I'm not sure you know what you just said. So I think the more people recognize that and the other point, like a health as a means to end, then healing can happen.
I love it. It's good stuff. It's frustrating too, because we've gotten so far away from what's natural, but because I don't know, it's just a human thing. We're myopic. We just look at it so closely. Everyone's just like, that's just the way it's always been. But to your point, throughout, I think, since the start of time, what we're doing right now is pretty highly unusual compared to before. And a lot of us are getting sicker and sicker, brain fog, inflammation, all sorts of things. Seems like it's pretty much related, but it is frustrating. Everything, like, oh, that's just the way it's always been. Always been that way before, but so. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been great, Dr. Petkus. I really appreciate it. I can't believe an hour went by already. Where can people find you? Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about what you're doing, where they can find you? I'll put a link in the description as well.
Yeah, I think probably the best would just be YouTube. Those aforementioned videos are a good start. And then in more of the videos, I'm including some more free guides. So that's cool to accompany what you've learned and apply it better. So I think YouTube would be a good place to start there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will have a link in the description, Dr. Petkus' YouTube channel. And I really appreciate you coming on. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great day.